This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. Coming up on the show this week, Roberta Williams and Jeremy Steinberg are here to talk about the North America Junior and Young Rider Championships, which take place in the Kentucky Horse Park from July 15th through the 20th. But we begin, as usual, with our trainer's tip this week, and Jeremy Steinberg has a tip about movement and how it affects the gaits of the horse. Jeremy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is one I think that we all need to be cognizant of. With every movement that we take, it's going to have an effect on that quality of that gait, isn't it?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's one of those things I think we get very caught up in over time, you know, working the horses and just training the movements because we want to progress through the levels. But we're not always aware of or working into the thought process of each of those movements, you know, has a specific function that it's supposed to kind of fit and work through in the horse's body, you know, response-wise, muscular-wise, you know, tendon ligament stretching and all that. I think when you look at, you know, all of the movements and their progression, those movements have been around a very long time. They're very proven as to, you know, the benefits and what they do physically to the horse's body for strength build and for stretching. And I think it's really important to know as you're progressing through the levels how, you know, how those things are going to affect the horse's body differently, why we push certain things more than others on certain types of horses that move a certain way or don't move a certain way, are built a certain way or have weakness in certain places. And I think a lot of those movements, you know, I talk a lot about our lateral work being kind of isolating type work for weakness. When we have a horse that has a discrepancy in their body on the, you know, left to right side, which they often do, most horses, the lateral work is one of those places we go to really search out and exploit the weakness to isolate it, get it stronger, and then in turn makes it that it's possible for the horses to travel straighter afterwards when they become more evenly muscled or evenly loose from side to side.
Give us some tips, Jeremy, if you would, as to how you can be mindful of the movement and how it impacts the quick. Let's just go through the walk, trot, and canter and some examples.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, so in the walk, I think one of the biggest qualities that you're looking for in the walk is, you know, really the definition of the walk should be a marching gait, you know, first and foremost. So I think, you know, whether you have a horse that's lazy in the walk or you have a horse maybe that's a little more lateral in the walk and tends to kind of lean toward that little bit more of a pacing gait, whether they're short strided in the walk and just tight in the walk, leg yield is one of the best things that you can do in the walk, you know, both while you're warming up and sometimes in between some of your work sessions where, you know, if you have a horse that tends to be a little lateral in the walk, that strong crossing sideways aspect that they have to work through and do in the walk is going to help break up that kind of two-beat swinging sequence that the horse's body wants to work in. If you have one that's a little bit on the tighter side, shorter strided side in the walk, the leg yield is also good just because of the stretch that you get through the horse's body, through its lower back, through kind of a strong crossing sideways type leg yield can, you know, really loosen that up and get the walk itself a little bit more ground cover and more reach from the looseness that it creates. You know, same goes for one that can be a little bit lazy or they're just a little too quiet. That challenge to the sideways can get them just kind of working a little hotter off the leg. I think when it comes to, you know, the trot, we really look at the trot and think, the trot, you know, covers ground like the walk does. It should theoretically have a certain amount of overtrack also like the walk. But what we really look at in the walk is getting the, sorry, that what we really look at in the trot is getting the trot to swing, you know, which is the quality of the gait that the trot owns distinctively as opposed to the canter or the walk. So with that swing in mind with the trot, you know, we talk a lot about the looseness of the horse in the trot, and as they're developing power in the trot, that there's no holding tension in the body that's going to limit or inhibit that ability to swing. The swing being, you know, part of the power flow through the horse's body, the range of movement that the legs, the limbs, and the joints are going to kind of cycle and circulate through. You know, as a good example with that is I always look at a shoulder in, and I think in my shoulder in, we all say it's supposed to work as a collecting movement. It's bending movement. It's supposed to engage the inside hind leg. But I think a lot also shoulder in about the stretch of the muscles on the outside of the body. So if I'm doing a shoulder in left, I'm really feeling for and looking for the response I'm getting on the right side of the body. Is it elongating? Is it stretching? Because that's telling me then the inside hind leg, as it's really powering up and swinging through the horse's body, it's affecting the outside front leg and outside shoulder, and it's good, clear, diagonal pair that it's supposed to work in. You know, we'll have a good stretch feel through the outside set of muscles. I think when it comes to the canter, you know, the definition of the canter, again, is a jumping gait. The canter doesn't swing and it doesn't march. The canter jumps. And so it's really important to keep in mind that anything we're doing with the canter is always eliciting a better jump quality out, or is never adding the effect of it being detrimental to the jump of the canter. You know, quite often you see people very fixated on getting their horses to counter canter and maybe not do a flying change, you know, and so they ride the counter canter repeatedly, getting the horse to counter with less energy so it stays on the lead. But if you look at the actual gait quality of the canter, the jump of the canter is becoming less and less. And we need to make sure that within the work, that jump quality is continuing to build over time to become greater and greater and more bounding, you know. So something like trot canters, I do a lot of with all my horses to just keep reminding them how kind of a controlled explosion in their body being the transition itself can really work to kind of pump them up into the air and off the ground. Lots of transitions within the gait of the canter as well, forward and back, just to keep making sure the canter itself stays fresh and stays active. But I think the most important part with the canter, beyond the idea of creating more jump, is making sure that nothing we do to the canter is creating a deficit or a loss of jump quality to it.
And, of course, always keeping in mind the cadence and the rhythm of each of these gaits, too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Those are, you know, I would say those are the commonalities between the gaits that are kind of fundamentally, you know, something that the gait quality can't be developed without. You know, there has to be a good rhythm. There has to be a certain cadence to that rhythm and to the stride itself. There has to be a certain amount of ground cover, you know, a forward thought in the horse's mind, or a quiet thought if you have one that's, you know, on the hotter side. You have to have all of those prerequisites, you know, kind of in place and working in order to gain access to and to work through the development of the quality of the gait.
Joining Jeremy now is Roberta Williams, who is the chair of the FEI Junior Young Rider Committee, to tell us about the Adequan FEI North America Junior and Young Rider Championships presented by Gotham North, which take place in the Kentucky Horse Park from July 15th through the 20th. Well, first of all, Roberta, why don't you begin with explaining really a little bit about the NAJYRC, what it's about, what the format is, and how it came about?
Well, the NHJYRC, which is the North American Junior and Young Riders Championships, is actually the highest rated horse show in North, Central, and South America outside of the Pan American or the Olympic Games. It is the only other horse show that has the Olympic disciplines besides dressage. It also has eventing, show jumping, and it's added reining, and I believe that they are going to be trying to add endurance as well. And the competition began in 1974, actually, as an eventing challenge between the United States and Canada. And then by 1982, dressage had been added, and the disciplines actually added to the schedule in 2006, the junior division. And then I think the reining came in 2008. But for what we're concerned about with the dressage is that it is almost an entire week of competition. The young riders come from 9 different regions in the United States as the juniors. And it's riders that are 4 riders per team, sorry, and from the different regions. And if a region is unable to field a team, then they can field 1 or 2 individuals. So the format is very similar to what it is with the Olympic Games. And it's sort of a stepping stone for the juniors and the young riders to start looking at the elite riders or the senior riders. And it's kind of a place that we can groom them for that kind of future. So that's what it is in a nutshell.
And we should point out, as you said, it is the highest ranking competition. It is an FEI rated discipline. It's an international competition, although it's just held within North America. And it obviously is, if you will, the launching pad for many young riders to get a foot in the door, as it were, with international competition and be exposed to that level of competition and the whole ethos of the team event, the working with the chef to keep. It's a wonderful grooming platform, if you will, for young riders, isn't it, Jeremy? You've worked with young riders for a number of years, obviously, and you can see the value in this event.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, like Roberta said, it's really, you kind of look at it like it's a mini Olympic Games in a sense, you know, where the regions become kind of your own country. So, you know, all the kids across the country divided up amongst their regions all come together to compete against each other, you know, with their own regional chef or the regions, you know, they're fielding, you know, 4 kids on a junior team and 4 kids on a young rider team. Some of them will have 2 separate, you know, chef to keeps for that. And, you know, we're always, myself especially, I'm always pushing with the kids that it's important that they understand, you know, as kind of a international team type championship, that their region basically becomes their country for the horse show, and to treat it like, you know, an Olympic Games or a Pan Am Games or such.
And importantly, as I said, it's an opportunity for them to understand what it means to be on a team and working with a chef to keep.
Yes, no, absolutely.
Exactly.
I know it's one of those things, you know, over the years we've, you know, we discuss a lot with them about how, you know, what the proper etiquette is for being on a team, how to conduct themselves, the role that the chef plays in that. And, you know, each region comes at it, I think, from a slightly different standpoint, just depending on geographically, depending on the temperament of the chef to keep, depending on the kids that they're working with, the parents involved. So they're all run very differently, very, you know, autonomously in that way. But, it's one of those experiences where the kids get to see for the first time how that works when they're kind of put in a plane or on a trailer and sent somewhere with, you know, the chef to keep as their kind of team leader, and how that structure works for the future.
Roberta,
one of the things first.
Sorry, yes, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, one of the things first is that when we started this, I've been involved with it since it was at Temple Farms, and the original organizers asked the FEI if they would recognize the regions for dressage and zones and areas for jumping and for eventing as their own countries, and also the provinces in Canada. So that one of the most important parts of this was really team building and laying that foundation of how to participate on a team so that our youth would be able to understand it and had an experience like that.
Talk us through the schedule for the week, Roberta, then. I mean, the team competition and the individual, how that all unfolds.
Well, the horses begin arriving. I think they can arrive at the Kentucky Horse Park, where it's found its home for the last couple of years, on Sunday. The California team tips Region 7, and some of the Canadians, they get in early because, of course, they have to fly their horses in. But Monday is the official arrival day. Tuesday is when the horses are examined in the barns to make certain that they don't have anything nasty that they picked up on the airplane. That's when they also put in their passports. And then later on in the day is the actual FEI jog. And the kids, what they do is each team then will get dressed up. They have jog outfits. And it's sort of a little bit of, in a sense, it's a little bit of a fashion show. You can kind of put your cool clothes on. And it's also a time that the kids, they're a little bit nervous because they want to make certain that their horses are presented in a good way. And also that, you know, even though theoretically all of the horses are sound when they arrive, there's still a little bit the nervousness of that, well, maybe my horse isn't sound, or maybe he stepped on something. So then that's what Tuesday is. Wednesday is the actual first day of team competition. Both the juniors and the young riders will be competing in the Rolex Arena, which is just a wonderful, wonderful experience. Going on that ramp is a huge thing. And the team competition goes on all day, and then we have the medal ceremony later on in the afternoon. On Thursday is the individual competitions, and the riders all move forward to that. In the old days, we used to have a consolation test, but we don't do that anymore. You just have the individual competition. And then on, and we have the individual medals. And that's in the afternoon. Then on Friday, that's a day off. That's a day that they just school. And it's also a day that we use, Jeremy and I have used it for the last couple of years. We have what we call the town hall meeting. And it's an opportunity for everybody to come and tell us their opinions of how we're doing in terms of organizing, in terms of the facilities, what they like and what they don't like. And then after our town hall meeting, we have a coaches meeting, and we kind of get down and talk about how the program is going in terms of training the horses and the riders. Saturday is the freestyles, and it's the top 15 from the individual that move forward to the freestyles. And I think the juniors start in the morning, and the young riders are in the afternoon. The medals are in the very afternoon, probably around 3:30 or 4, and then the competitors starting on Saturday night. Sunday, everybody gets to go home. So it's pretty much the week. It feels like it's a month, but that's pretty much the week. I don't know if I've left anything out, Jeremy.
No, that's the schedule in a nutshell. It's packed for the kids all week. I always feel just bad for them because they have every moment of that, you know, their life there at the horse show during that week really scheduled. But I think, again, similar to any other, you know, international team type event like that, there's things, you know, social events that they need to go to meet the other teams. There's, you know, just meets in the barn with the chef. There's, you know, kind of strategy meetings about how to choose which horses are going to go which, you know, in which order on which days and all of that. So they definitely have a very scheduled, busy, and active week where I think usually by Sunday everybody just passes out at the end of it.
And there is also the fun events too. They get to decorate their golf carts and theme those. And it just seems a great festive occasion for them. It isn't just the discipline and the intensity of the competition. You always make sure that they have a good time as well.
Yeah, I think kind of funny in the last couple of years, these kids, the dressage kids at least, you know, I've really noticed them bending toward, they're taking the competition so serious. We have to actually motivate them and encourage them to go to some of the parties because they all want to go to bed early. Some of them actually are doing summer school classes. I have known a bunch of them to be going back to the hotel to actually do homework. And the kids are getting very competitive and very serious about it. But there's tons of fun things to do for them also during the week. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we start off the week with what we call the party on the patio, and that's actually Monday evening, and it is hosted by USDF and Platinum Performance, and it's meant to be. There's a meeting for the kids with Jeremy, and there's a meeting with parents for me, just to sort of, you know, a quick outline what the expectations are. But then it's basically sort of a pizza party and a chance for the parents all to kind of get a look at each other and the kids to, you know, kind of look at each other and see who's who. And they come right straight from the barns. Nobody gets dressed up. It's not supposed to be a dress-up party. It's just supposed to be a real get-together. You know, we're here, and let's kick the week off. And that's the first sort of fun thing.
That's the only thing that we do with the kids. It's just the dressage group of kids. Everything else is usually mixed up with the other disciplines and things.
Right. Tuesday, I guess, this year, what they're doing is they're having their opening ceremonies, and there's a party at Spios Farms, which they used to be two separate events, and now it's one single event. And Spios is just beautiful, and it's right next door to the horse park, and that's when the kids get to, they decorate their golf carts, and they have a big golf cart parade that goes from, you know, the stabling through the backside of, I think it goes past the campgrounds, doesn't it?
Yes, I believe so.
And then, yeah. And then they announce the golf cart winner, decoration contest winner. And this year they're also going to do the opening ceremony so that the two are together. And that's also great fun. And then, of course, on Saturday night, it's the big competitors' party. So that also is, I've known some kids to run down the hillside and run through the arena through the sprinklers. Just as a showcase.
I've known some adults to do it, too.
Yes, there's someone that can do it, too.
Jeremy, coming back to the chef de keep and the role of the coaches, explain to us how that works in terms of you as a chef de keep, how you then, you know, immerse yourself in that role. At what point do you assume that responsibility when you arrive at the horse park, and how do you relate with the coaches and the individual coaches that come in? Explain that scenario.
So I get in usually on Sunday morning sometime as the USDF national coach for the kids. They've been there a day or two already, or a day and a half, depending on my flights and stuff. Monday is in the afternoon. Sometimes I'll have some time to help some kids. Otherwise, I usually just come and meet everybody at that party on the patio and say hi, and we kind of get rolling on Tuesdays. The chef de keeps are usually there theoretically, the moment the teams are really on the show ground, the chefs are supposed to be there with them. A lot of kids bring their own individual trainers, you know, with them on the trips. Some show up early, some show up later into the competition week. Sometimes we'll have a trainer, you know, work both as the trainer for one of the kids or two of the kids on the team and also as the chef to keep. Sometimes a parent steps in and does it. Sometimes it's a complete third party that's doing it. And really my job, you know, is kind of multifaceted. I do a lot of work with the chef de keeps, just keeping track of good things, bad things, you know, places that they need to keep the kids focused and directed to keep a good, you know, a flow for the week for them with their horses, with the competition. I work with the trainers a lot, you know, that are both the trainers of the kids that are there, and trainers remotely, maybe that couldn't be there to coach the actual kids. I'll step in sometimes and take over that role for them if their trainers can't be there. A lot of the time I'll have the trainers that are there at the horse show with the kids ask me to kind of, you know, oversee what they're doing with their kids in warm up, just to make sure, you know, I don't see anything that needs to be added or changed. I do have a lot of interaction with the judges throughout the week as well, and the show management and stuff, to just make sure that whether it's a problem on, you know, a shift keeps end, a rider's end, a trainer end, that they have a person that can relay that information to the judges or the show management or the technical delegate for that matter. And also working the other way around, that the judges are definitely, you know, outspoken about if they see a trend on the first day of competition, whether it's a lot of nervous riders or not accurate riders. You know, that's one we hear the most, is the accuracy, things like that. And I make sure to, in turn, bring that information back to all of the trainers and or chefs, so that they're getting information from the judges as far as what the judges are seeing trending, so they know to be pushing harder or differently at the kids if they need to for that kind of a thing.
Is the trainer or coach of an individual rider obligated to work through you as the chef de keep of the team?
No. I work with them completely on their own accord. I am there, you know, if they want to use me or they don't. Most of the kids and most of the trainers, at some point throughout the horse show, we do have an interaction of some kind, some more in depth than others. I'm pretty outspoken to, again, if I see something that I don't like or I really do like, that I make sure to also convey that, not in a, you know, overbearing way of, you know, saying they have to change everything they're doing. I just make sure that they do get, you know, that note from me going, you know, my feeling would be I would be pushing for this or that. Or, like I said, if I see something that I think is really good that they're doing, I make sure to let them know that as well. I've had, in the couple of years I've been in the position, you know, when I first got the job, the USCF Dressage Committee, you know, warned me and said that the parents, the trainers, the kids are going to be pretty standoffish at first to the idea of having a national trainer there at the horse shows with them, and to be offended if they're not asking for help and, you know, doing things like that. But pretty much from the first moment, the kids and the trainers and the parents knew they had a national trainer kind of in their corner working for them. They've really used it. So I go to the horse shows, and I have almost more kids asking for help during that week of the horse show than I can actually physically get to. So, and like I said, it's all voluntary on there. They don't have to work with me, but there's a huge percentage of them that are jumping in to take that chance, that opportunity. I think it's also interesting, like on Friday, on the day off that they have, I'm teaching a lot of lessons on that day because a lot of kids will come up and want to know if they can get an extra lesson in. And I've had a ton of kids for the last couple of years, the ones that don't make the freestyle on Saturday, they're still asking if they could get a private lesson in on Saturday just to get a little more help with their horses. So we've had a lot of good feedback on the coaching that they've been getting. So that's just been a phenomenal thing in the last couple of years.
I kind of have to qualify a little bit that answer. I think because when you ask the question if the trainers have to interact with the chef to keep, and the coach are separate titles. If it's strictly the chef to keep, not the coach, the trainers of the individual riders and the riders do have to work with the chef to keep, not work in a sense that they have to train with him or her. But the chef de keep is the technical representative of the team to the competition. So, for example, if I was the chef de keep and Jeremy were the trainer of Susie Q, and there was an issue with Susie Q and Spot, her Wonder Horse, let's say it's with the heat, then Jeremy would come to me as the chef and say, look, you know, we have a little bit of this problem with this horse. He's older. He has a heat problem. And so he would bring it to my attention. And then as chef de keep, I would be the one who determined the order of go for the team. So that would be something that we would discuss, so that I would be aware of it, and all of the trainers of the team would get together and we'd talk about that. So yes, the trainers do have to work with the chef on administrative, quote-unquote, administrative items of the team. To answer the question, do the trainers have to work with Jeremy as the coach? He gave you a wonderful explanation of that. So I just wanted to be really clear as to the roles of each of them.
Now, one of the things that we've seen emerge over the years through the NAJYRC is the caliber of horses and riders. It's been obviously producing some outstanding talent as alumni over the years that have made the senior team, having come through the junior and young rider ranks. Do you want to just speak to that, Roberta, because you've watched this talent unfold, and then maybe, Jeremy, you'd like to comment on the quality of horses that has been produced through these championships.
Well, first of all, Jeremy is one of our talented alumni. I mean, he was a gold medalist at the NAJYRC. Courtney King, she went to NAJYRC. And actually, Courtney didn't do necessarily all that well. She had a sort of average horse, but look where she ended up in at the Olympics. Chris Hickey is an alum. Elizabeth Ball is an alum. Kathleen Rain is an alum. We've got a lot of alumni that are high profile, but we also have a lot of alumni that are out there that are teaching and training the kids and the adult amateurs, and I think that's really important. You know, we have a lot of people who come to the NAJYRC, and they are the ones who are educating our adult amateurs in dressage. Mm. But the why the name escapes me, but up in Region 6, Jeremy, the two girls that went to Young Riders and their mom, Irvings. They run a wonderful riding program in just out in Washington, or where is it?
Yep, Washington.
So anyway, yeah, so it kind of, it feeds not just the high performance programs, but NAJYRC, I really think the whole program feeds our sport on a lot of different levels.
Jeremy, do you want to just speak to the quality of horses? Because we see some really impressive combinations out there with some very big horses for some small ride and young riders.
Yeah, I think, you know, it goes through phases. You know, every couple of years, be an increase, you know, volume-wise with some higher and higher caliber horses, and it kind of seems like it tapers off a little bit and gets quiet again for a couple of years, and then we get a big spike again. I think the spikes, you know, when we get the horses like Brandy Ronick coming in on Waltino's Magic, you know, that Stefan Peters rode in Aachen and did the Pan Ams on and all of that, it's one of those moments where it really does start to bring the competition up to a different level. It's not always feasible, you know, for a lot of kids to have horses of that caliber, but it gives them the chance to see that it's possible for a young rider to be matched for the horse of that caliber and to see the work done, you know, at that level. I think it then in turn creates a kind of a group of kids that then want it, you know, that then want to be that next one competing at that level or on that caliber of a horse, and they go out and start pushing both their own riding skills to be better and also pushing to find better and better horses. You know, I think the last few years we're slowly starting to see more horses creep into the 70% and above, you know, score range in the St. George and individual test. And you know, that's something where in years past we really weren't seeing. And I know we'd love to see more horses, you know, scoring up into 70% and above, but we're getting there and seeing it. And I think that's one of those big things. You know, you don't get a horse at Free St. George scoring 70% or above that isn't a high caliber horse. because so much of that score is just based on the quality of horse and quality of gates that is, you know, able to produce. So as we see the scores coming up in that capacity as well, we're seeing the actual horse flesh come up quite a bit.
And Roberta, for any person listening to this thinking they would love to ride at these championships one year, tell us about the tests that they would be expected to compete in.
Well, they can start, if they want to do the, they can start as a junior rider. And the FEI designates the riders by age groups. So you have, when you talk about FEI pony riders, a pony rider isn't a rider who rides ponies. It's actually 14 to 18, right. Okay. And then young riders are up to the age of 21. So the juniors, the tests that they would ride are the FEI junior tests, which are similar to the third level tests. They're required to ride a flying change, and they also have a freestyle that they have to ride. And then the young riders ride the FEI Young Rider Team Test, which is actually the Pre-St. George. There is FEI Individual Test, which is similar to the Pre-St. George. It's not as high as the Intermediate one. So they still have to do flying changes for some three companies and half pirouettes. And then there's a Young Rider Freestyle. So in order to qualify to do this, they have to, both the juniors and the young riders, the requirements are the same, just different tests. The juniors have to ride three tests, three team tests, three individual tests at designated qualifying competitions or at a CVI-YJ. And then ride more than three tests. They ride four, then they can draw a score. The same with young riders, they have to ride three tests, the average of those three tests, and then they are ranked within the region, and that's how the teams are selected. For all of the information on this, they can either go to usdf.org or usef.org and click on dressage and go to that website, and the qualifying procedures are there, or they simply can call USDF. So it's pretty easily accessible to find out how to do this. Each region also has a regional coordinator that is their go-to person that they can talk to find, and the parents can go and talk to the regional coordinator to do that. But in a nutshell, that's what those tests are. Third level for the juniors and Pre-St. George for the young riders.
And if they want to find more information, of course, on this year's competition, which takes place in the Kentucky Horse Park between July 15th and 20th, they can also go to youngriders.org. Jeremy, is there anything you would like to add?
No, I look forward, you know, really just to seeing everybody in a couple of weeks at the show and catching up. A lot of the riders are seen throughout the year, so I'm excited to see improvements that they've made, and some of them I haven't seen, and excited to kind of see where they're at and have a good visit with them. And you know, I always look forward to the competition because it's just such a fun week and a really educational one for everybody involved. And from my end, also a lot of information goes back to USCF from what comes out, the riding quality, all of that what comes out of the NAJYRC, that information goes back to USCF, and it helps them kind of work with what they're going to do with the actual national program over time. So I'm always excited to kind of go through the week and see what we have at the end of the week.
And Roberta, any final remarks?
I guess, you know, I second what Jeremy says. I'm really looking forward to going to NAJYRC. It, for me, it's also a time to see old friends, dear friends that we've been doing NAJYRC for over 20 years. None of us had gray hair when we first started it. But I want to say that the wonderful thing about the NAJYRC, not just dressage, is that it is such a huge volunteer effort. And at the end of it, everybody feels good about what they've done. So it's not just that we do it for the benefit of the kids. We do it has volunteers, and I think that's an extraordinary thing about this particular competition, because I don't know of very many other competitions that bring together this many people for the love of the sport.
And once again, that website is youngriders.org. You can also find more information on the USDF website at usdf.org. And while you're on the website, be sure to visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education. And a reminder that you can subscribe to these weekly podcasts on iTunes, where they're available for download. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.